Reporter and author Peter Godwin was born and raised in Zimbabwe. Today he lives in New York, but his childhood home is never far from his thoughts. In 1984, after his father had a heart attack, Godwin began a series of pilgrimages to Zimbabwe. He started to see Zimbabwe's downward spiral at the hands of Robert Mugabe's regime. His parents, like many white farmers in Zimbabwe, were attacked and harassed. Godwin's new book on Zimbabwe is When a Crocodile Eats the Sun, a Memoir of Africa. He explains that his parents' allegiance to Zimbabwe is strong and why they refused to leave.
You know, I think it really had become their home. My parents had emigrated from Europe just after the Second World War, and I had been born and grew up, you know, and raised in Zimbabwe. And I always thought that I was the real African and they were the kind of first-generation immigrants. But then after I left and started working as a writer and a foreign correspondent moving around the world, a strange thing happened, which was really we kind of went on reverse trajectories. And I realized one day that they were becoming more African and perhaps I was becoming less African or perhaps more cosmopolitan or whatever it was. And that was really their home. That was their sanctuary. And I realized that looking at Africa from the perspective or from the platform of Europe in the late 1940s, Africa looked like the sanctuary to them. It was Europe that almost looked like we look at Africa today. It was Europe that had been ravaged by two world wars, by the Holocaust, by pogroms. It was a violent, awful place that people wanted to get out of.
What do you see now when you look at the newspaper headlines about Zimbabwe?
Well, Zimbabwe is an unmitigated tragedy, and insofar as tragedy gets worse in proportion to its avoidability, it really is a huge tragedy. It's down essentially to the hubris of one man, really, to one man who would rather act out his imperial fantasies and bring the pillars of the country down upon the heads of everybody rather than leave office, even though he's at very advanced old age now. And it is an absolute tragedy. I mean, we're in a situation now where what used to be the most developed country in Africa is now spiraling down into a failed state. There's cholera everywhere at the moment. The school system, which used to be the envy of the continent, at one point Zimbabwe had a literacy rate well into the 90s. A few months ago, the Ministry of Education just gave up. They closed all the schools and sent the teachers home. They couldn't afford to keep going. It's with a terribly heavy heart that I look at the place and I visit it now.
So are you still close to any of your black Zimbabwean friends?
Absolutely. I'm in touch with friends in Zimbabwe all the time, and I follow events there very closely. I mean, sometimes to my family's chagrin, who they think that I live in my head more there than here in New York City, where I physically live. So I do stay up with events a lot. I was recently back in Zimbabwe on assignment for Vanity Fair and did a piece for them that was about the elections. And I actually sort of got stuck there between the two elections. I was there for almost 100 days, in fact. They kicked out all the foreign journalists and I sort of wasn't quite supposed to be there. I wasn't sure whether I was or not. I didn't have a work permit. So it was oddly, I felt safer to stay than to go. And also what had happened was at that point this summer, Mugabe launched this terrible campaign of violence between these two elections. And they started beating up people and torturing them, burning people's houses down and assassinating opposition activists. It was an appalling time. And I witnessed a lot of it and spoke to a lot of these torture victims, you know, on a daily basis.
I heard that there was, you know, certainly heard through firsthand reports and also through news reports that there was a lot more violence than there had ever been.
I think there was more violence this summer in Zimbabwe than there has been since the Matabeleland massacres in the early 1980s, when perhaps 15, 20, even 25,000 people, civilians, were killed. This was the most violent episode we've seen since then. And it's had a lot of implications. I mean, one of the implications it's had, I think, is that because it's been quite well documented, because we took a lot of affidavits and sworn statements and witnesses and everything, that it's made the regime almost more scared to leave power, because I think they worry that there is the possibility now of crimes against humanity charges being brought against them. And I think it's a real fear.
When you hear about all of the ongoing interventions, whether it's Thabo Mbeki or whether it was the attempt of former U.S. President Carter to go and be of help, and how these interventions have not helped. What do you think would help?
It's a huge irony, for one, that the Committee of Elders, that Carter and Kofi Annan and Graca Machel weren't allowed to come into Zimbabwe. I mean, given the fact that Graca Machel's late husband, Samora Machel, as the once president of Mozambique, hosted Mugabe as a guerrilla leader and sort of ensured that he came to power, that Carter, as well as both when he was president and as an international statesman, brought huge amounts of pressure on the old Rhodesian regime to help Mugabe get into power, and that they're not even allowed in, to have a look around on a humanitarian basis. So that is an enormous irony. I think that Mugabe has been very good at spinning the situation there initially as some kind of race story. And I think the media has fallen for it to some extent. I mean, we've covered the white farm invasions rather too much, I think, and neglected when black civilians have been oppressed there and beaten up and, as I've said, murdered and tortured and things. I think the key to it all is still South Africa. And it's our great misfortune at the moment that South Africans are very distracted by all their internal politics.
Some people have called for outright civil war. Is that even an option?
Here's the thing about Zimbabwe. The civic society, which then in turn launched the MDC, the main opposition party, they've made it one of their foundation pacts that they would stay nonviolent. They followed the way of Martin Luther King, of Gandhi. That was what they were going to do. And they've kept their word by and large to that, even while there have been a lot of young radicals within the movement who have got so sick of all of this. It's been going on for 8 years now, and say, this is never going to happen peacefully. We need to do something. We need to take up arms. The leadership has opposed that, and so far successfully. But really, this has been going for 8 years, and there's been no international help. I mean, the Zimbabwean opposition has done everything the international community has asked of them. They've stayed nonviolent. They've followed the paths of democracy as much as they can, and they've got absolutely nowhere. And in that 8 years, the country has been destroyed. We've lost, never mind to violence, but to a collapsed healthcare system and to hunger. We've lost thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of people. But sadly for Zimbabwe, it lacks two essential exports that would get that intervention: oil and terrorism. If it exported either of those two things, then I think the international community would be much quicker to actually intervene.
Peter, thank you.
You're welcome.
Peter Godwin is an award-winning journalist, documentary filmmaker, and screenwriter. His latest book is When a Crocodile Eats the Sun, a memoir of Africa. And he joined us from our New York studios.